Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, April 16th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, California's commercial ocean salmon season canceled for third year in a row. Why one community near Willits is becoming fire-wise. And Fort Bragg officers use less than lethal tactics against erratic intruder. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. Three small earthquakes were recorded off of Humboldt Coast today, Wednesday, April 16th, measuring at magnitudes 3.8, 3.5, and 3.0, all occurring along the Mendocino Fault Zone, offshore of Cape Mendocino, west of Petrolia, the site of the magnitude 7 earthquake that struck on December 5th of 2024. Since that major event, more than 540 aftershocks have been recorded in or near the rupture zone. While most occurred within the first week, the strongest so far was a magnitude 5.3 on December 14th. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, aftershocks are expected to continue for at least a year, with the potential for another in the magnitude 5 range. Humboldt County is considered the most seismically active region in the contiguous United States, and helpful preparedness tips and resources are available on our website, kmud.org. The Pacific Fisheries Management Council has recommended a third consecutive full closure of California's commercial ocean salmon fishery for 2025, citing continued low population forecasts for Klamath and Sacramento Fall Run Chinook. This announcement marks a grim milestone, as it's the first time in California history that the commercial ocean salmon fishery has been closed for three consecutive years.
That is correct, yes.
That was Candace Morgan Stern, a senior environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Ocean Salmon Project. While this decision closes the commercial fishery, it also opens the door for a limited return of recreational fishing, a long-awaited opportunity for many anglers, marking the first legal recreational salmon season in California since 2022. However, not everyone supports the recreational opener and argue that the decision wasn't based entirely on science, but was instead influenced by politics. Kenny Priest of Fishing the North Coast.
They're not following the data. The data is saying X, and you're not believing that data, even though out of the last 10 years, we have not made escapement 7 times. So they've been wrong 7 out of 10 times as far as their numbers. Yet, they're saying, go ahead and have a season of 7,000 fish. And yeah, we have no business having a season.
KMUD News spoke with representative from the Pacific Fishery Management Council, Save California Salmon, CDFW, and local anglers. We'll bring you the full story later this week. Turning to Mendocino. Mendocino Farm Bureau asks Trump to block the Eel River dam removal. KZYX's Elise Cox shares this report.
The United States Army Corps of Engineers will undertake a study addressing increased water storage in the Russian River watershed. And farmers have asked President Trump to intervene in the Powder Valley decommissioning project. So far, the president has not responded. The Army Corps of Engineers study, which was announced in a press release sent to the media on Sunday, will complement the regional agreement reached earlier this year to construct new infrastructure to maintain downstream water flows following the decommissioning of the Potter Valley project. PG&E has said it will present its final decommissioning plans to FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in July. The plan will include the removal of the Scott Dam and Cape Horn Dam and a new facility for diverting water from the Eel River to the Russian River to meet the needs of Mendocino, Sonoma, and Marin County water users. Decommissioning is becoming a reality, and for some people, that is very upsetting. While the regional agreement is the product of nearly 20 years of discussions involving a multitude of stakeholders in Mendocino and Sonoma counties, there are still many unknowns. The study by the United States Army Corps of Engineers could answer some of those questions. However, the answers will almost certainly not please everyone, and people who disagree with the regional agreement have been calling for action just about everywhere, from Board of Supervisor meetings to town halls to farm bureaus. A week before the study was announced, the farm bureaus of Mendocino, Lake, Sonoma, and Marin County made a joint appeal for an urgent meeting with President Donald Trump and representatives from the Departments of Energy, Interior, Agriculture, Homeland Security, and Commerce. The purpose of the meeting is to discuss federal intervention options. The appeal to Trump was made on April 4th, a week before the United States Army Corps of Engineers study was announced. Estelle Clifton, president of the Mendocino County Farm Bureau, acknowledged the sensitivities around the decommissioning project, which encompasses water rights, environmental concerns, emergency response, and seismic risk.
I really want to recognize the work that the partnership on the Two Basin Solution has been doing, and the Inland Water and Power Commission and Sonoma Water Agency have been working behind the scenes for a long time, and now recently they've come out with their memorandum of agreement that has been, you know, our chance to see what some of the plans going forward are. And part of the reason why Farm Bureau wrote the letter we just came out with is because there's a lot of unanswered questions that we don't feel are adequately dealt with in the memorandum of agreement. And we're looking for some help answering those. And just to go through them real quick, we want to see that the diversion is preserved. But there's questions as to when water would become available, and then also the seasonality of that water. So if you have only water in the winter months and you don't have a place to store it, it's not of great use. There's water everywhere in the winter. So what would happen if the decommissioning occurred and the dams were removed? How long would it take to have another diversion structure? How would that water then be stored? And so, of course, adding storage is a huge need in our area, and raising the Coyote Dam is one solution, but there's more storage needed than just that. And how would that be supported through this decommissioning process? The other item, the third one, would be seeing that we had forbearance for those water right holders downstream, because most people's water right deals with the season when they use it. And if water was now only available in different months, how would we meet the needs of those users to store water that's outside of their, say, licensed or even riparian users? Could they start storing some water to make up for the seasonality of future diversions?
Some would say you're also inviting an element of chaos into the negotiations. I wonder if that came up when you were speaking kind of frankly with each other about taking this step.
Yeah, there is a concern that we aren't wanting to undermine the work that the partnerships are already working on. We want to not create chaos or disruption, but there's a lot of users that have legitimate concerns about how this will work out. Part of what we're asking for is more time. There could be a very quick fast track between when the decommissioning could potentially be approved and what would happen next for our side of the hill. And so there's a lot of uncertainty and it's all coming to a head.
And so the Mendocino County Farm Bureau is going to make sure that its members' questions are asked and that their concerns are heard.
We're taking a stand for our concerns that we don't feel undermines the work that's being done.
For KZYX News, I'm Elise Cox. For all our local stories, visit kzyx.org.
A Fort Bragg woman was arrested early Wednesday morning after allegedly assaulting police officers and barricading herself in an occupied apartment, prompting a tense standoff that ended without major injury. Fort Bragg Police Chief Neil Cervenka walked us through the initial call and what officers encountered upon arriving at the scene on East Redwood Avenue in Fort Bragg.
Last night, about 12:30 a.m., officers received an emergency call for a woman screaming in the 200 block of East Redwood Avenue. When officers arrived, they located Jenny Maligan, 47, of Fort Bragg. She was on an upstairs balcony of an apartment building, and she had a large kitchen knife in her hand that she was waving around, and she was continually screaming. Officers attempted to de-escalate. They didn't approach her because it was a very narrow stairway to that balcony. Officers knew who she was and knew she did not live there. And the people inside the apartment were the ones calling the police, saying they didn't know who she was. While they were trying to de-escalate verbally, she picked up a flower pot weighing about 10 pounds full of dirt and threw it at the officers who were down below her. It shattered near their feet. As they jumped out of the way, they retreated. And when they came back into view, she threw another pot and then a third pot at them, missing an officer by inches as he looked out from around the corner. At this point, officers attempted to deploy the taser. And we use the Taser 10 here in Fort Bragg, which has about a 45-foot range. So officers were able to engage Maligan, even though they were on the ground and she was on a second floor balcony when she appeared at the stairway. They attempted multiple times and could not get good contact. And they think it's because as soon as it made contact, she would fall back behind the corner and the wires would break. So it was breaking connection every time. She suddenly got up, broke the window next to the front door of an apartment and climbed in that window. Officers were afraid for the lives of the people inside that apartment and ran up the stairs after her, one officer climbing through the broken window and slicing his hand on the broken glass. He got in and unlocked the door for the other two officers to go in. The suspect had retreated down the hallway to a bathroom and barricaded herself in the bathroom. Officers knew there were two more people in the apartment that had been calling us, and they had hidden in their bedroom, also in that hallway. So officers moved into the hallway, into danger, past that bedroom door, and then an officer escorted the two people out of the apartment outside to safety. They were in a barricade situation with the suspect screaming through the door. They began to force entry into the door. And when they did, they got it open a couple of inches, and they could see the suspect holding the lid from the toilet tank in a striking position to use as a weapon. That's a heavy piece of porcelain. They quickly came up with a plan, and all three of them forced through the door into the small bathroom, which caused the suspect to drop lid to the toilet tank. And they got her under control at that point in that very small room. The suspect was taken to the hospital for medical clearance. And while she was uninjured from the arrest, they were concerned she was giving signs of being under the influence of a controlled substance, and they needed to have her medically cleared for that. She was subsequently arrested and booked into Mendocino County Jail on the charges of assault with a deadly weapon likely to cause great bodily injury, felony resist an officer, felony vandalism, trespass on occupied property, and being under the influence of a controlled substance. The injured police officer was treated at Adventist Health Coast Hospital emergency room, and he was released, and he was immediately released to full duty as well. I would just like to point out in this that you see cases very similar to this across the country that end in deadly force, and our officers put themselves in harm's way and ended the very chaotic situation without the use of deadly force. That can't be done every time, but every time it can be done or can be tried, we try to do it that way.
This incident could have easily led to the use of deadly force. We asked Chief Cervenka to share the specific tactics or trainings that helped officers resolve the situation without injury to the suspect.
They get a lot of de-escalation training. We've had training from Why'd You Stop Me, which is critical incident de-escalation style training. But to be clear, none of that was working because of the state that the suspect was in. She was unwilling to listen to any of the techniques learned. So really, this incident comes down to the courage of the officers putting themselves in harm's way to resolve a situation and protect the lives of other community members.
As for how the injured officer is recovering, Chief Cervenka says,
he was treated at the emergency room. They bandaged him up. He wanted to come back to work right away, and they released him to full duty. And looking at the log, he went and handled another call or two or three other calls before the end of the shift. So he just, like most police officers, we have an incident, we deal with it, and we move on to the next incident. And this officer did that spectacularly. He's fine. It'll heal. There's no permanent damage. He was fortunate in that regard. He did, as soon as he cut his hand, he grabbed a piece of clothing that was on the ground nearby, wrapped his hand in it to stem the flow of bleeding, and immediately went to work with the two other officers in getting the suspect into custody.
Substance-related issues complicated the police response, an issue officers commonly face. Chief Cervenka says the department works with local resources to address these challenges, both during emergencies and through prevention.
Yeah, there's actually quite a bit here on the coast. We have MAT, Medicated Aided Treatment. It's a walk-in clinic. Anyone can walk in and begin medicated aided treatment to get help them through their substance use disorder. Our team right here in Fort Bragg Police Department, the Care Response Unit, through Project Right Now, has assisted. Last year, they assisted 24 people into rehabilitation, and they work with the, we call them clients. They work with the client. They help the client through the intake process with a recovery center, and then we'll even take them to the recovery center. We have the ability to put them in a safe environment if they're homeless, or if it's not a good environment where they're living, we can, for that week before they go, to make sure that they stay clean and sober, we put them up in different locations. And we just got the Prop 47 grant to fund this, and it is helping the hospitality center expand services. So we're expanding our services outside of Fort Bragg to the coast. Right, we're as far south as Mendocino right now, but we're taking clients from anywhere on the coast, really, down to Albion.
To learn more about those resources, you can contact the Fort Bragg Police Department at 707-964-0200 or the Hospitality House Resource Center at 707-961-1150. In closing, Chief Cervenka wanted to applaud his officers for a job well done.
In the news, you always see the stories of the officer shooting a suspect in cases similar to this, because that is the type of story that will get views in the media. But there are cases like this every day from around the country where officers resolve a situation without deadly force, even though they could. They didn't. They put themselves in harm's way to resolve it without injury to the suspect.
Anyone with additional information about this incident is encouraged to contact Sergeant Welter of the Fort Bragg Police Department. That number is 707-961-2800, extension 212. Just outside Willits, the String Creek community is taking the next step in wildfire preparedness, transitioning from fire safe to officially fire wise. They aim to boost safety, unlock grant opportunities, and qualify for insurance discounts. Once approved, they'll become Mendocino County's 14th FireWise community, up from just 4 less than a year ago. Sarah Reith shares this report.
Spring is short and fire season is long in the highly combustible landscape of rural Mendocino County. Neighborhood fire safe councils are a great way to prevent disaster by sharing information and resources, organizing workdays, and providing many other ways to help homes withstand wildfire. Communities can take their efforts even further and receive substantial benefits by becoming designated as FireWise USA communities by the National Fire Protection Association. FireWise communities are safer because they write up risk assessments and action plans and then act on them. They also have access to the latest scientific findings such as preventing ember ignition of homes, and they increase their chances of getting grants for wildfire safety projects. Significantly, as home insurance costs skyrocket, recent state Safer from Wildfires regulations require insurance companies to offer discounts on premiums to homeowners in FireWise communities. After some initial work, the FireWise commitment is not much more than organizing workdays and contact trees, which your neighborhood may already be doing. A board or committee of volunteers, such as a neighborhood fire safe council, needs to work with a qualified organization, such as the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council, to conduct a neighborhood risk assessment and prepare a 3-year action plan. Then you collectively get to work on your action plan to address the risks you've identified. For instance, clearing access roads, removing hazard trees, or doing home hardening and defensible space around homes, all of which have an impact on the overall safety of the neighborhood. And you need to keep track of volunteer hours and money spent on wildfire safety equipment or improvements. The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council is happy to help communities advance to FireWise status and can provide free hands-on guidance and tools to simplify the process. One sunny Saturday afternoon in early March, Mendocino County FireSafe Council Executive Director Scott Craddy and Community Outreach Coordinator Eva King joined the String Creek Tartar Canyon FireSafe Council as they took their first steps toward becoming the county's 14th FireWise community. Less than a year ago, there were only 4 FireWise communities in Mendocino County. String Creek is a small settlement of about 70 people northeast of Willits, including a few dozen homes, often at the end of long, steep, narrow driveways and mostly occupied by 1 or 2 people who are no longer young. For Joanne Moore, a founding member of String Creek Tartar Canyon Fire Safe Council, the moment of reckoning came late one night in June 2020 when her neighbor's house caught on fire.
We were very, very lucky. It could have been the beginning of a terrible fire.
After it was over, she began to think about how to make sure the next fire didn't devastate her community either.
It was kind of hard to find the place. I think the sheriff had problems. We didn't have road signs. There were places where there wasn't the road sign. You didn't know to go right. And I thought, well, it's time that we have to grow. Finally, we have to grow up. We got to get road signs. And that was kind of the beginning of it. Mm-hmm.
That led to a decision to buy low-cost reflective address signs from the Mendocino County Fire Safe Council. One thing led to another, and soon a neighborhood fire safe council grew out of their local road association. Wendy Stevens, another String Creek Tartar Canyon Fire Safe Council member, has lived all her life in the house that her father built on String Creek.
We've accomplished quite a few things, applying for grants, got a water tank for water storage for in case of emergencies, and we've done a few fuel reduction projects along the road.
The group also maintains a large, centrally located meadow, which is ideal for picnics, bocce ball tournaments, and sheltering in place if it ever becomes impossible to flee the area.
A lot of people around here don't know where to begin. I mean, there's so much work to do and so much to be knowledgeable about, like, you know, knowing that they need the 1/8-inch mesh on their vents and the, you know, skirting around their decks. And those are things that not everybody even knows are requirements. And also, once they find out that they are those requirements, now they have to know, like, how do I go about doing this on my entire home? And where do I get the funding to do that, mm-hmm. too? Because a lot of the folks that live around here are pretty low income and don't really have very much money to put into upgrades on their homes like that. But I think it is a good time for us to educate them all, our whole community, about the resources that are available to us.
Those resources include Mendocino County Fire Safe Council's DSAFE, or Defensible Space Assistance for Income Eligible Seniors and People with Disabilities program, which provides fuel reduction work at no cost. The work is done around the home and main access routes, including some of those steep driveways.
There was a whole shuffle before we went up, like who has a four-wheel drive, who can make it up these driveways. So that seems like a huge thing to take into consideration, and not just in this community, but in a lot of communities around here.
It's typical. Yeah, those driveways where you go, are you kidding? really? This is your driveway? You maintain this? But it's not unusual, and it contributes to how difficult it is to be fire safe.
The community risk assessment, which is the first step towards drafting a FireWise action plan, includes assessing a sample of homes for safety features such as non-combustible building materials, deck skirting, and fire-resistant landscaping within 100 feet of any structure. To be FireWise, communities need to make a plan that addresses the main shortfalls and then make demonstrable progress each year toward increasing their neighborhood safety. Joanne feels she benefited from String Creek Tartar Canyon Fire Safe Council's community assessment. She was especially struck by the silent devastation of tiny embers, which can slip through vents or kindle a full-scale blaze in debris-littered roof corners.
It's how those embers get in there. So I learned a lot. There is a lot to learn, and it's actually interesting.
The community will probably start small with educational campaigns, strategic placement and protection of outbuildings, and maybe incorporating grazing into their fuel management. Coming up with an effective means of communication during a disaster and creating a map of water resources and high-risk areas for firefighters are a few other priorities that will be organized in order of importance and feasibility. Overall, they were pleased with their initial foray into heightening the safety of their neighborhood.
I feel really happy that our community is mobilizing in this way. We're meeting once a month. We formed our little Fire Safe Council, and we have fun at our meetings. We're productive, and we've gotten some things done, and I feel like really proud of the work that we've done. And just, I love our little community up here on String Creek, and I think that we work really well together, and we all really care about each other and care about making this place better, because we all love living out here, and we don't want to live anywhere else.
For more information on creating a FireWise community, visit Mendocino County Fire Safe Council's webpage at www.firesafemendocino.org/FireWiseUSA. If you are a low-income senior or person with disabilities, free DSAFE assistance information is available at firesafemendocino.org/Defensible Space Assistance Program. Reporting for KMUD News, I'm Sarah Reif.
Humboldt County is home to 10 active FireWise communities. And with support from the Humboldt County FireWise Regional Coordinator, your neighborhood could be next. To learn more, you can visit humboldtgov.org and search FireWise Communities. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send us an email to news@KMUD.org. Reporting for KMUD in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.